You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Alexander Brewington. Alexander, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Alexander, we're talking about your show, What Burns Beneath, at the Ari Goldberg, that ran through March 16th in 2024. So, this is a beautiful show, and of course, a very provocative title too, which I think, speaks to what's happening here, right? We're talking about an interior experience, right? When you use the title What Burns Beneath, or does that have another reference? I read that as a kind of an interior psychological experience.
Yes. I guess for me, I thought about it as kind of an internal fire or blaze that existed in each person, that what was happening beneath the surface level of something that was going on, like I said, internally.
And so let's talk about that. There's a lot of stories being told here. There's one that I really like. This is about a 3x4 inch oil painting on wood panel, and it's called She Who Walks Out of the Dark. And it almost looks like under an overpass, maybe the High Line or subway in Brooklyn. And it's a really beautiful painting, not just because of the light, but also because of the story that it's telling, what's on the ground behind her. And this idea of she who walks out of the dark seems to speak to something much larger than the narrative of, in one way, she's literally, walking out of the dark. Can you tell me a little bit about that painting? Because it does reference kind of another story, right?
Yes. So this painting, for me, is kind of about being in representative of a dark place internally, and kind of you taking the opportunity to remove yourself from that situation. Specifically in the painting, there are three crows in the background behind her that are eating a dead possum. And for me, that was important to put in this painting because this specific place was about death and about grief. So I thought about it as a place of, okay, from this death and loss of life, there is now a new reality that you're walking into as you're exiting the darkness.
So that's a pretty beautiful narrative, and also pretty heavy. A place of death and grief. Is this an actual place that has an association with death and grief, or are you talking about it, as you said, like through the crows and, eating this carcass as a symbol of something else, or is this something that actually happened? Is this an actual place that has associations with it?
No, I think it's more, I guess I would say, psychological, and I'd say more representative of that idea that out of the possum being dead, the crows kind of have a new life. And out of the idea of death and grief and those things kind of happening and existing, there kind of creates this new space of where you go on from here.
I see. And, and that's kind of a beautiful space in a way, the way you talk about it, because as dark as that sounds, in a way, it's about redemption. It's about survival. It's about something other than the kind of incredible downward pull of these difficult emotions and feelings, right? This is about, in some ways, I don't know what the right word is, but transcending some of this, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's about kind of overcoming that and just kind of trying to find whatever that new space looks like as you exit the darkness.
And that darkness comes up in another painting, or perhaps several, but by title it comes up in another one, which is a little bit of smaller painting in 3 by 2 feet, and it's called Persist in the Darkness. And this also has a central character standing in, looks like a New York City street, looking at the viewer, at the viewer of the painting. So Persist in Darkness, that has a little bit of a different meaning, right, than She Who Walks Out of the Dark. We're still talking about these kinds of... Yeah, so tell me about that one, because persisting sounds like you haven't emerged, but it's about a kind of survival tactic within it.
Yes, I think there are two kind of characters I would say that I consider on a similar journey. It's just one is like at the end of that chapter, and one is still in it. So for me, persisting the darkness, I'd say, is more about kind of having a resiliency to kind of, even though you're still in this space, kind of how you navigate it.
That makes sense. And I want to talk about more of these. Well, one thing that appears in several of these is the city as this wonderful, luminous, often nighttime backdrop that looks kind of fantastic. We're talking about characters in a landscape here, but the landscape is often New York. It's a city, and it's a city filled with lights and often at night, which makes it look kind of, you know, in some ways foreboding, you know, danger could be here, but it also looks like the glory of New York. This is beautiful New York. I mean, those are my associations, but in terms of you doing this, why the beautiful, bright lights of nighttime New York always in these works?
I think for me, like every good television show in New York kind of talks about it as if New York is like a fifth character, to where just the surrounding, the being there, that it kind of has its own energy and associations with that. For me, I kind of felt like I wanted these moments to be isolating, to where each figure, whether they were by themselves or a group of two or a group of three, were kind of in this space kind of by themselves. But that's kind of like a juxtaposition, because in New York, you know, there's tons of people. There's thousands and millions of people all kind of crowded around you. So I felt like the representation of the lights and all this movement and energy of what's going on around you, kind of this feeling that even though you're in this space with millions of people, you're by yourself, you're isolated, you're alone. It was kind of this like back and forth of like, there's people around you, yet you're still by yourself.
Right, that's something that's really, I mean, I'm a New Yorker, and I don't know if that's a real city thing, but it seems to be in a way, because that, as I understand what you're saying, that loneliness can be felt, or that's one term for what we're talking about, that kind of angst or struggle, it can be that much more acute in a city full of energy, life, and people, right?
Yeah. Like, how is there, like, because it almost doesn't make sense, because it's like, how can you feel isolated, yet there's so many people everywhere all around you? But it just kind of creates that feeling.
Yeah, it sure does. And then there's another one. So many of these directly address the viewer, which I really like. There's another one called Are You Okay, Friend? And, you know, I really love this one, not just because of how it's painted, the background, but the characters are again, addressing the viewer directly. And, you know, I don't often see that in painting. Of course, it's happened historically, but, you know, Are You Okay, Friend? It becomes incredibly personal. I feel like they're asking me that question specifically.
Yeah.
And that's so provocative in a way. So, was that your your attention
yeah.
to address the viewer
that
way?
That was definitely my intention, because this is of the series What Burns Beneath, this is the first painting where there's just a little bit of fire, where behind the two figures in the foreground and the background, there's like a bus depot where there's a figure that's kind of on fire in the bus depot, where it's kind of at this space of, are you looking at your own reflection? Are you the person being consumed by fire and you're seeing it? Are you seeing someone else on fire? What's happening? And you're kind of at this place of confusion, unsure. And then there's the two figures in the foreground that kind of meet you at this place of like not understanding what's happening, but they know something's wrong. So they're trying to kind of meet you where you're at.
Yeah, that's such a powerful gesture, you know. I don't know if there's another story that comes along with that for you, but you know that to me, I don't know if it's also resonating because of the time we're in that can be so divisive in a number of ways. But this idea of saying to a friend, "Are you okay?" Saying to the viewer, "If you're okay," that's entirely about empathy, and it's about empathy without actually knowing what's wrong. You know, it's almost a gesture of love, really, right? Of a kind of brotherly love, of a kind of human love, but it strikes me as, fortunately or unfortunately, as a kind of exceptional gesture, you know, and not to go too extreme here, but it seems almost saintly, right? Are you okay? You know, can I help you? Kind of thing.
Yeah.
It seems, something, yeah. I mean, if you want to speak to that, it strikes me as something very beautiful about that, and unusual, because we don't see that often, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't think I think that's something that's become more uncommon of, you know, looking out for your neighbor, your fellow man, your fellow person. I think just the idea of like having that empathy and realizing that everybody on their own journey has their own struggles, has their own battles, and being able to be there. And even if it's just a small, hey, are you okay? What's going on? I think that's powerful.
I think so too. I think that's very powerful. I think it's not something, it's something we need much more of. That's for sure. Thank you for that. And so, you know, to talk about another one, which I like, which also seems quite different. It's called End on a High Note. And this, I suppose, could have a couple of associations. Again, the figure looking directly at the viewer. But End on a High Note, that also has so many associations that could be, you know, someone's actually, you know, celebrating, or it could be someone's high, and it's the opposite of that, or a combination. Can you tell me about that one? It's so interesting.
Yeah, so it's funny. This one was very specific to the person. I mean, all of them are specific to the models, but this one was specific to this person because his name or chosen name is Note, the model. That's what he's gone by for quite a while. So it was kind of this moment of me acknowledging him, like that being who he is as a person, but also he's a very good friend of mine who, right before this series, decided to leave New York. So it's kind of this moment of one of my friends moving on to this other stage of his life after we'd been here 2 years together. And so it's kind of like this, it like closing of a chapter, but trying to kind of put a fun spin on it.
I like that, right? The high note is leaving. I mean, that's for him, but not necessarily, of course, for friends, because he's going somewhere else. But something else. And I like that. There's one more that I'd like to talk about called Back on Track, and this is one of the few where the figure in the foreground is not looking directly at the camera. They're looking down. Figure looks a little sad, where we see, of course, elevated subways in the background, and it's back on track, which seems like a positive note. Yet the figure looks a bit forlorn. Can you tell me about that one? I really like this one.
Yeah, so, I kind of imagine this one. There's another painting that this figure is in. What's the title? Where there's a figure under the underpass smoking, and she's staring directly at him. So this is kind of in my mind after that moment, where she's kind of accepted that she kind of has to move on from this person, move on from this space to kind of get to whatever's next for her. So it's kind of like her kind of getting back in her groove and maybe not being happy about the way it's happening or the way she's getting there, but kind of finding that place again.
I see. And the painting that you're referring to, is that Point of Ignition, the other one?
Yes, right? Point of Ignition. So I couldn't think of the title at the second.
There's one more painting I'd like to discuss, and that's Drawn to the Flame. This also seems to have a different meaning, and this is really complex. It looks like there's three characters in here, two that are sort of celebrating around a table, or they might be celebrating, and there's a third that looks like they're perhaps in a mirror or a window. What's happening here? Because Drawn to the Flame sounds a little bit foreboding as well.
Yeah. So in the bottom kind of left corner, there's a moth kind of flying into a candle. So that was kind of like my thought process about what this represented, about how sometimes vices and the things we turn to and kind of bad moments can look attractive. Like the one figure who's drinking, he's smiling, he's laughing, having a good time, while the other that's kind of leaning kind of more forward in the chair kind of has more of a downward kind of expression. He's kind of more in a negative place with it, while the figure in the background is kind of more, I'd say, directing to the viewer, kind of like looking directly at the viewer while they're smoking outside. But then to me, this is just kind of about that idea that things that can, to some people, be fun or enticing can maybe have negative implications. Like to a moth, a flame is very interesting and very enticing, but if the moth gets too close, it'll get burnt up.
Right, a dangerous but attractive situation at the same time. Thanks, Alexander, for talking about these. I mean, for listeners, of course, there's links here so you can see more of these images and more information about the show. I want to ask you one more question, Alexander. What are you reading at the moment?
So recently I've gotten back into this book, a very well-known book by Ralph Ellison, The Invisible Man. A great listen, kind of thoughts about like identity, your place in the world, ideas about race, and it's been a great read.
Alexander, I want to thank you so much for talking to me. It's really been a pleasure, and thank you for putting together this beautiful, beautiful show.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, and thank you so much for your time.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.